Conference and Solution Series.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
Tony Scardino, a chief financial officer at the Patent and Trademark Office.
CRs are debilitating. They're starting to go longer and longer. Problem is, once you actually get an appropriation, usually you get a budget increase or you get a budget decrease. How are you going to manage that over the next X amount of months to get you to the end of the fiscal year? Well, that's really challenging. Think of your procurement staff, all the contracts you have to continually reaward for shorter periods.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
Check your thrift savings plan numbers every day at federalnewsradio.com. Find out how your funds closed and how they're doing for the year. It's all right there on our homepage, federalnewsradio.com.
This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Kevin Plexico. Kevin is the Senior VP of Research and Analysis Services at Input. Input is, if you haven't heard, a Dell Tech Information Solutions company. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. It's always a pleasure to be here.
It's always a pleasure to have you. There's just a lot of stuff going down right now. So, why don't we start with the proposed budget, $61 billion proposed by one side and the other side saying ain't no way. What's it mean?
There are stark differences between the budget that was the continuing resolution that was proposed by the House, primarily driven by the House Republicans, and the President's request. The House continuing resolution that was passed would represent $100 billion cut from the President's request. That's big money in any way you slice it.
Yeah.
The budget request that was made by the President was only a $20 billion cut versus the 2010 level. So relatively modest cuts in the scheme of things, a little bit more than a 1% cut on total discretionary budget. So to me, those are two diametrically opposed budget scenarios,
right?
And you
so
know,
$20 billion is only 1%, so $100 billion is only 5%.
But that's in the current year.
Yeah, okay.
One's in the current year.
Okay.
Midway through that year, and the other one's for a whole year.
Yeah. Well, when we're talking CR, you know, it's the end of February, and the budget starts October 1. And Congress's main job is passing a budget on an annual basis. So I was kind of disappointed the last Congress punted yet again, but I, you know, not a major disappointment because it's been since, what, 1994 since a budget has passed on time and intact?
Yeah, and it doesn't seem to have any correlation to what political party is in the House, Senate, or the White House. They all seem to not be able to get a deal done on time, regardless of whether they're in agreement and they have the same party or they're different parties. Well, this one is just really fascinating because of the diametrically different continuing resolution or omnibus consideration that was going on right before the old Congress left and adjourned versus the new Congress that's come in, and how different you know, just a few months makes and what a budget environment looks like is pretty amazing to me.
Yeah, it is, and you know, the new Congress technically shouldn't have been responsible for this budget. However, I'm sure if they prioritized it at a level as like re-election campaigns, maybe it would have gotten passed.
Well, both sides seem to firmly believe they're on the moral high ground, which is why I think a shutdown is looking increasingly likely.
Well, yeah, shutdown definitely looms. You got anything else on the budget issues you want to touch on first?
Well, sure. A few things on the budget issues, actually. Let's start with the continuing resolution budget that was for 2011 that the House put forward. Major cuts in infrastructure investment, a big burden being put on the grant area for state and local governments, a lot of housing assistance, employment assistance programs. Those were some of the major cuts that were put forward. Almost $10 billion in cuts to assistance to state and local governments. And as you well know, state and local governments are not so well from a fiscal point of view to begin with.
Well, yeah. California is, 200-plus days behind in paying its bills, and $60 billion?
They tend to get a lot of the publicity because they're the biggest state, right, from a financial point of view, but it's certainly not isolated to them. Follow the challenges in Wisconsin as well to get a sense for where the states are.
Right. So it's a scary situation, you know, and the moral high ground is not occupied by it's not a sole proprietorship.
Right.
What else on the budget?
So I think, I guess a couple of things I'd add on in talking specifically about the discretionary budget that was proposed by the president. There's some, I think when you look at the total amount of money that they're talking about cutting, in the scheme of things, not that much. You know, obviously there's a long way between here and the 2012 fiscal year and the appropriations process that's involved in that, and obviously the House is going to have a big say in that. But I think what's interesting is there are some clear kind of winners and losers. There are 14 organizations getting an increase of 5% or more, so there's still some organizations that are clearly going to be expanding their spending amidst this sea of cuts, and then there's eight organizations are getting, I'll tell you just in a second.
Okay, thanks.
Eight organizations getting double-digit cuts, so it's going to be a feast or famine discussion when it comes to the budget, because some organizations are doing so well. Some of the ones that would be getting big increases, again, this is according to the president's request, not validated by Congress yet.
Right.
GSA, Education, Energy, National Science Foundation, the VA, really associated, right, to the expansion, yeah, of benefits to veterans. International assistance programs, also similar to the VA, when we have kind of a drawdown in a war effort, you tend to see a ramp up in domestic consular affairs and foreign assistance programs to support that, as well as veterans benefits and Social Security Administration. So those are some of the ones that that are in that 5%+ increase on a discretionary basis. And then you look at some of the ones that are looking the other side of the coin, transportation. A lot of cuts associated with reforms to and consolidation of service transportation programs. So not so much on the FAA, but Maritime Administration, Federal Highway Administration, all those have cuts associated with kind of a consolidation effort that they're embarking on there. Commerce, though, most of the cuts in commerce come really from the census drawing down. So that's more of a cyclical, every 10 years we have this major spike in spending there. And then, again, in the theme of impact on the states, the Justice Department, pretty significant cuts, about $600 million in cuts in the form of cuts and grants to states for criminal justice support.
Man, so, that's scary.
Yeah, so it's interesting because when you look at some of these cuts, they're almost a reversal of some of the programs that were getting investment during the stimulus. So a lot of the same programs that were getting big spikes in growth during the Recovery Act passage, right, are now finding ourselves on the opposite side of the equation, like on
Federal
the
Federal Highway
side.
Administration, that infrastructure issue, they got a fair amount of, or they were supposed to get a fair amount of money. I actually don't know how much they got.
They got a lot, but okay, a lot of that's been spent.
Yeah, well, hopefully a lot of improvements occurred, because driving into D.C., you know, if I drive down before 9 o'clock, I get the curb lane, because you can't park. But the downside to the curb lane is there's a lot of potholes.
Right.
more there, apparently. did we beat up the budget?
I think so.
Okay. Well, let's migrate down a little bit then. What's the impact of the budget on the contracting community? We are going to get to the shutdown. That's going to be a big part, but it's going to be later. So let's beat up all angles of the budget first. What's it mean for the contractors?
I have to say, if I'm a contractor looking at the budget request from the president, I'm feeling pretty good about the outlook relative to the rhetoric that you'd hear around town. Most of the cuts, as I mentioned, are in areas that are relatively insulated from the contracting community, or were expected cuts, like I mentioned, the commerce grants to state and local governments that are getting cut, environmental programs that would get cut in the EPA. All those are areas that, for the most part, most government contractors don't play in those areas, so have relatively little to fear from those types of reductions. There are some cuts in administrative expenses that are kind of across the board for agencies. In the scheme of things, in any one particular agency, they don't amount to much. But when you add them all up, they're significant, you know, certainly multi-billion dollar. But again, those are relatively small cuts in the scheme of things. So I'd be feeling pretty good if I were a government contractor.
Cool. My guest today is Kevin Plexico. Kevin is the Senior Vice President for Research and Analysis Services at Input. When we come back, we are talking a little more about what the budget means for the contracting community. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Hi, I'm Denise Ballou of the FBI. The case was revealed in December 1995. Operation Senior Sentinel targeted illegal boiler rooms and telemarketing fraud.
The case was hugely significant in that it's one of the few, if not only, instances I can think of where an entire crime problem was basically wiped out by very focused, dramatic investigation.
Keith Slaughter is special agent in charge of FBI San Diego. Formerly in Miami, he initiated the undercover operation that evolved into Senior Sentinel.
These were telemarketers who were really, really bad individuals who were promising big prizes and a lot of different things, preying on customers, especially the elderly.
Many were conned into losing their life savings, but the tables were turned.
Instead of using undercover agents in those cases, we used a combination of retired agents and retired citizens affiliated with the AARP to pose as victims.
Ultimately, about 1,200 arrests and hundreds of convictions. I'm Denise Ballou of the Bureau on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
And now, here's the virtualization expert, brought to you by VMware and Carahsoft.
This is Aileen Black, Vice President of VMware Federal. When it comes to issues like IT consolidation and cloud computing, it can't be overstated. Experience matters. More federal IT infrastructure is virtualized on VMware to create elastic, self-healing, on-demand pools of IT resources than any other platform. In fact, our experience is one of the attributes noted in Gartner's Magic Quadrant on server virtualization. Chances are you know a VMware user. Most civilian and defense agencies use our technology to benefit their missions. Their VMware experience is evidence of the dramatic benefits virtualization delivers. Users can see up to 90% reduction in cost. 190,000 customers can't be wrong.
VMware's IT as a service solutions are based on their award-winning virtualization technology that's the foundation of cloud computing. To learn more, download Gartner's Magic Quadrant on server consolidation at thevirtualizationexpert.com.
Do you know someone who has done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's second annual Causey Awards. Together, we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated. Career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search award.
Plan now to attend a firm's March 17th luncheon to hear a provocative and compelling talk on the state of cybercrime worldwide. Hear from the firm's special speaker from the FBI as he walks through the global world of crime online. That's March 17th at noon at the George Washington University Marvin Center in Washington, D.C. Register today at www.affirm.org. That's www.affirm.org.
Looking for usable news and information that helps you do your job? Tune into In-Depth with Francis Rose every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Francis explores the relationship between agencies and Congress by taking you to the hearing rooms on Capitol Hill and asking questions of federal decision makers and experts. You'll get a firsthand look at how Congress affects your agency's personnel, funding, and oversight. In-Depth also looks at the relationship between agencies and contractors, companies that do billions of dollars of business with the federal government, talk about the work they're doing for agencies, the work they're bidding on, and the work they didn't get. And In-Depth will help you be a better manager. Francis talks to authors, scholars, and managerial experts about managing projects, managing your workforce, and managing yourself. In-Depth with Francis Rose, every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest is Kevin Plexico, Senior VP of Research and Analysis at Input.
Yeah, Input's a research firm that specializes in tracking the government contracting market. We're owned by a company called Deltek, which is an enterprise software company that specializes in providing solutions to government contractors. So we provide the full life cycle of information, analysis, and software to help companies succeed in the government contracting world.
Program management software and accounting software.
That's correct.
So, I know a lot of companies that use it. excuse me. Let's talk a little more about the IT related issues on the budget, then the contractor issues. What are you predicting?
So I think there's a few areas that that I think contractors can look to for growth amidst the discussions of cuts, and some of those areas that I'd call out, IT is one of them. I think with the planned investments in consolidation, moving agencies to cloud computing, as well as investments that are required in the Department of Defense and Veterans Affairs, some of the other agencies that have significant IT investments that are planned, you know, those are going to be areas that I would say is one that contractors can count on for continued growth. Healthcare and the investments to support the healthcare implementation, and obviously the growth and cost of healthcare, also going to be an area of opportunity. So there's a few areas that I think contractors can look to get above market growth, if you will. From an IT point of view, the budget that was proposed is a 1.5% increase on the prior year budget, relatively modest. But if you follow the patterns of government IT budgeting, what we typically see is what actually gets spent on the back end of the request is almost always higher than the request itself. So okay. I view this request as relatively conservative in the scheme of things.
What should contractors be focusing on then for the budget? And the healthcare is definitely one. National Science Foundation has a relatively modest budget to begin with.
They do.
But they have a very important role when it comes to facilitating the education, hopefully, of future scientists and engineers in our country.
There's a lot of work and business that gets generated that's more R&D related in National Science Foundation, as well as one of the areas is going to mention cybersecurity. Clearly, that's going to be an area of opportunity across agencies, and NSF does a fair amount of investment in R&D to advance our preparedness as it relates to cybersecurity. So I think that's one of the areas in the IT realm that companies can look at that really cut across agencies.
Right.
So healthcare being one, given that many agencies are involved in healthcare delivery in some way, shape, or form, either providing it through payment processing or providing it as a provider of healthcare, like VA and the military. Energy and environment are areas where we're seeing investment. I mentioned Department of Energy is one of the areas that's getting quite a bit of investment around the energy efficiency.
Okay, I was going to ask, is that how much of that is in the green arena, the reducing the carbon?
Offhand, I don't know the amounts that they're talking about. A lot of it is finding alternative ways to distribute power. Smart grid technology that's around that, better batteries, more efficient solar panels. So some of it's kind of off the beaten path for the typical government contractor, and others are kind of right in the crosshairs.
Well, yeah, there's been since the early 90s battery companies pushing for and solar power companies pushing for, but you know, just like a lot of the dot-com era, just ahead of the curve,
right?
Right. You know, maybe a hot area to discuss, but it's not hot in the government market until funding occurs. So, but you know, and the VA, the international assistance thing is going to be pretty wacky given what's going on in the Middle East right now too.
Some of those countries are facing a lot of internal strife. That's I think Egypt's really plowed the path and set an example that a lot of other countries are starting to follow. So I don't know exactly how the State Department's going to play in those areas, but I'm glad I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, it's not our gig, and we'll vacate that topic now. But the last on the list of the agencies with potential growth was Social Security. And I know that they have a couple of programs there. But one of the issues across all of these agencies, and it's an issue that was brought up during the campaign, a lot of people who are now in Congress were talking about a reduction in force. And I'm wondering if there's any funding anywhere for more 1102s and more training for the current 1102s contracting community throughout government. Have you seen anything on that?
Yeah, it seems to me that that's one area where you can expect expansion in the federal workforce is in the contracting world. They seem to have bipartisan support for the notion that we need to have more folks on the front lines handling the government contracting for us to be able to do it effectively and efficiently. So they have committed to a 5% increase in that, relatively modest in the scheme of things, but amidst the budget environment that we're in, that's pretty high growth. I think it's going to be interesting because not so much in the contracting world, but in other areas of government, there's been a lot of talk about insourcing. That seemed to be the political wave that came in with the Democrats when they come in and took over Congress, was this big movement towards insourcing. Well, now that seems to be politically off the table. When you're talking about budget cuts, not many organizations want to talk about ramping up government employees, which is effectively what you'd have to do to bring contracting jobs that are getting contracted in-house.
Right. Well, you know, the total irony on the federal workforce reduction is the only time it's ever occurred was under Bill Clinton. And there's just so much irony there, but we're not going to go there either. All right. Have we whacked the heck out of all of the budget issues? Do you have any more?
Well, just a couple I'd call out. Interestingly, the big winners and losers on the IT budget side, you'll see some mentions in the winners that are also losers on the total discretionary budget side. And I think it just goes to show that there are some big investments in IT that can, in the scheme of things, are relatively small amidst the total discretionary dollars of an agency. Mm-hmm. Some of the big winners like transportation, agriculture, energy and education are going to be getting pretty significant increases in their budget, assuming the current request is passed. Transportation is ironic because they're on the loser list on the total discretionary dollars, right, but they have some pretty big investments in the FAA that really dominate the spending on the transportation side. So that's one area. And then on the loser side, the organizations that are kind of staring down pretty steep reductions, NASA, a 10% reduction, Justice, a 14% reduction in HUD, Housing and Urban Development, relatively small agency in terms of IT spending, but facing a 30% reduction.
Well, so education's not huge on the IT spending either. So
correct.
It's kind of weird that they're getting a perk. They could double their budget, and it probably wouldn't be a significant spike.
That's correct. A big percentage change on a small number is still a small change in the scheme of things.
Right. I'm not picking on education. I'm simply pointing out that their budget is not traditionally huge.
No.
Which is weird because we need more education.
Well, you know, the education money tends to flow more to the institutions that are on the front lines of delivering it versus spent kind of in the headquarters operation of education. So it's a little interesting diametric there.
Okay. My guest today is Kevin Plexico, Senior Vice President of Research and Analysis Services at Input. When we come back, we're getting into the shutdown or potential shutdown. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Over 100 and going strong. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreifuss. With HHS HealthBeat, some people live to be over 100 with clear minds and active bodies. Healthy living can help people get there, along with good genes. And a researcher says good attitudes seem to make a difference, too. Leonard Poon of the University of Georgia looked at data on 244 people ages 100 years or older. Some were in remarkably good shape, those he calls expert survivors. Poon says they tended to be adaptable, not dwelling on bad feelings about problems, and maybe trying to fix them.
Instead of being inflexible, they tend to be more flexible, and they also tend to be in charge of the environment.
The study in the journal Current Gerontology and Geriatrics Research was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreifuss.
Hi, I'm Neil Asbury, host of The Neil Asbury Show. Please join me and my guests each week as we discuss the importance of international trade, entrepreneurialism, small business ownership, job creation, and the American dream.
The Neil Asbury Show, Saturday mornings at 8 on Federal News Radio. The Neil Asbury Show is sponsored by AIT Worldwide Logistics, Yoakum Shore and Trossaven, and WTS, Withers Worldwide Transportation Systems.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Do mimes make even less sense when you can't see them?
The mime is stuck inside a giant invisible box. Now he's drawing an imaginary door, and now he's opening his imaginary door. And the imaginary door just shut on his fingers. Now he's doing an imaginary cry.
Switch to GEICO now and you could save hundreds on your car insurance. For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Join host Jane Norris for Fed Central on Wednesday, March 2nd at 11:30 a.m. as she talks with her guests Mitchell Glassman, Director Deloitte Consulting, and the Honorable Tom Davis, former representative from the state of Virginia, now Director of Federal Government Affairs at Deloitte. They will discuss how the Dodd-Frank legislation is intended to help restore responsibility and accountability. Don't miss Deloitte's Fed Central program on Wednesday, March 2nd at 11:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife. My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
In the beloved fairy tale, Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly 1 in 3 children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Ad Council.
On Tuesday, the prestigious $500,000 Draper Prize, engineering's highest honor, will be awarded for invention of a process called directed evolution. Through evolution, nature has created biochemicals exquisitely designed for their roles in life processes.
I wanted to build new versions of these things that wouldn't do natural jobs, but instead would help me solve human problems.
Francis Arnold of Caltech is an inventor of directed evolution.
You can optimize biological systems for all sorts of human applications, from baking to laundry detergents to drugs and drug delivery.
She tweaks the genetic blueprints of natural proteins and sees if the change creates a desired function.
I'll collect the ones I like and I'll throw the other ones away.
The process is then repeated in a fine tuning similar to breeding, but with molecules instead of animals. To find out more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
There's a new show in town for the connected, curious, and innovative. Chris Dorbeck hosts the brand new Dorbeck Insider, weekdays from 3 to 7 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Only Chris has the energy and the Rolodex to bring you inside the decision-making that changes your workday. He challenges conventional wisdom by asking his high-profile guests about what worked and what didn't. The Dorbeck Insider is information sharing on the radio in the government 2.0 world. The Dorbeck Insider, weekday afternoons from 3 to 7 only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is Kevin Plexico, Senior Vice President of Research and Analysis Services at Input. Throughout the Washington Post, throughout Federal News Radio, crank up WTOP. The potential shutdown is huge news in Washington. The March 4 deadline looms. The proposals from each side are radically different just for another CR. So I'm just going to throw this at you and let you run.
Right. Well, I think where I'd start is having some perspective on the magnitude of the issue if there were a government shutdown. So when they talk about a federal shutdown, it's really talking about a set of agencies, not all parts of government. So there's many parts of government. In fact, if you looked at the amount of money that's spent from a discretionary point of view, you're probably talking about large parts of government that would remain open. So emergency services, border security, law enforcement, national security, obviously the military, and then there's some question about Social Security and Medicare, but they've remained open in the past, and checks have continued to be cut for those folks. So that if you add up government, there's some pretty large chunks of government that are going to be insulated from a shutdown. But then you also have large parts of government that would be impacted, like the Park Service, Forest Service, where there's revenue generating activities that would cost the government even more than just the salaries and contracting.
What if there's a forest fire in a national forest?
That would be an emergency. Okay, so they would do something about that.
One would hope. Pray for rain. let me throw out a couple of scenarios here. my wife was a Fed. I don't know if you knew that or not.
I didn't.
It was a while back. But she worked at EPA and Fish and Wildlife. Two stints at Fish and Wildlife, EPA in the middle. But she worked on the CITES, the international trade of endangered species, import and export, that sort of thing. There was a lot of travel and a lot of conferences involved in that. And it's an international type thing. And I know also you take agencies or sub-agencies like CDC and NIH. They have continuous on-campus meetings of people from around the world on extraordinarily important and timely issues. What happens when a shutdown occurs and you've got people coming in literally from all over the world to a facility that may not be open?
I think it gets very muddy from agency to agency. If you're a federal employee traveling for your agency, you're supposed to come home for the most part, though there's some guidance and flexibility that the agencies have depending on the perspective around how long the shutdown will last. You might have heard the term soft shutdown versus hard shutdown being discussed lately. The soft shutdown being come to work, but just sit there. Don't do anything. Don't incur any cost. But we might be back up in a few hours. And the hard shutdown meaning go home. Don't come back to work until we call you because we're effectively shut down. And I think it's going to be interesting to watch that and see how that transpires. And, your question about conferences and people flying in, obviously it depends on whether they're an employee versus, somebody who's from a foreign country or a visitor that's coming to an event. Clearly, their plans are going to have to get disrupted, but they're going to be bearing the cost of that most likely.
Yeah, but I mean, let's think of our reputation in certain international communities. CDC and NIH in particular. NIH hosts a number of educational conferences that involve children from not just around the country but around the world. Bringing in kids to, educate them on various aspects of health and health care. If kids are flying in from all over the world and NIH facilities are not available, hello, what happens to our image? I'm not talking about budget-wise, but, it's a rhetorical question.
Yeah, it's never stopped them before, has it?
No, it hasn't. But, again, it goes back to our point earlier. You got one job, Congress. Why cannot you perform it? it's irritating. Anyway, so let's talk about maybe what this means to the contracting community at large. you go around the Beltway, and what, 30% of the workforce out there is related to government.
Yeah, I think it depends on a few things. First of all, you should expect, depending on the length of the shutdown, delays in payments. There's nobody going to be there to process the payments and send you checks if the government is shut down. And so a prolonged shutdown means delay in collections on your cash flow, and you have to consider that and the impact that it has on your company. The other areas around the work and the type of contract you have. So if you have a time and materials contract and you are on site and the government shuts down, you are out of work and you're going to be sent home, and the agency can't pay you for those services, which likely means your company is going to have to either not pay you or potentially put you on another project or some internal project. I mean, companies at that point have some latitude on what to do with an employee that's on contract from the government that's sent home, because it's ultimately their employee.
Right, it's their employee, but they have to fund it out of a different bucket.
The company will have to pay the cost because the agency's not going to. There are some contracts, let's say you're on a fixed price contract to build something, and you're not working on site at the government agency, and some of the funds for that development work have already been obligated. In that case, the contract could continue working, and the employees could continue working on the contract because they've already received the funding for the activity that they're engaged in doing. And in that case, your business is usual. So,
but what if they're on site?
Then, if they're on site, then they're going to be out of luck.
Yeah, because there's nobody to let you
unless the company can work out with the agency a way for them to work at a different location for the shutdown. Again, it still depends on that funding having been obligated already, because they can't incur additional obligations.
Let me throw you a scenario. I was speaking yesterday to a let's call him a mid-level manager, 14 or 15, I don't know which, but they were instructed by their higher-ups not to discuss a potential shutdown either with the contractors that they're responsible for or employees. I mean, it's to say nothing pertaining to this. So how does, if a shutdown occurs, how does one, I mean, you're what are you going to do, pick up your cell phone and call them at home?
Well, every agency is required to have a shutdown plan that they're supposed to be maintaining. And I would be surprised if that shutdown plan for that agency called for no advance notice of a shutdown or discussion or planning around how you're going to deal with it. So that's a little surprising that kind of guidance would come down.
Well, maybe it's just that this person is not at the level to have a grasp of the larger plan, but still, they would be an implementer.
Sure, absolutely.
Man, but... All right.
Every agency has their own plan and their own set of criteria around what are essential personnel, what are services that are going to continue, which ones are not. And the agencies have quite a bit of latitude around deciding that, though they can't do it for large groups that are clearly not essential for government on an emergency basis to operate.
Okay. Let's just take the break there. My guest is Kevin Plexico. Kevin is a Senior Vice President for Research and Analysis Services at Input. When we come back, we're going to wrap up on the shutdown and maybe catch up on a little more news impacting the contractor community. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is Jim Fleisig. Please join me on Tuesday, March 1st at 12 noon for my monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This month will be a Department of Homeland Security CIO roundtable live from the 2011 AFSEA Homeland Security Conference. My guests will be from Coast Guard, NPPD, TSA, and CIS. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum Tuesday, March 1st at 12 noon right here on 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Sponsored by the AFSEA Homeland Security Conference and Solutions Series.
The website of the week is the Google Transparency Report. Now, this site includes an interactive map, so you can click on different countries. The Chinese officials consider censorship demands to be state secrets, so we cannot disclose that information at this time. This can show traffic patterns. If a country blocks internet access, you can immediately see this. You can see if any countries are blocking internet traffic. The Google Transparency Report.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Malcolm Jackson is the Environmental Protection Agency's Assistant Administrator in the Office of Environmental Information and Chief Information Officer. He says the agency's IT projects have come under a lot of scrutiny.
We've conducted our own tech stats, and I've gone through almost all of the 21 projects to date, and we look very hard at cybersecurity, architecture reviews, sequencing, and ensuring that we're meeting the needs of the agency as a whole.
CIOs and IT directors, is your network-attached storage infrastructure out of control? Do you have dozens and dozens of NAS appliances that are difficult to administer? Ask the experts at Vion Corporation how Hitachi's high-performance NAS, powered by BlueArc, can consolidate your NAS infrastructure, reduce your number of NAS appliances, and improve your NAS performance. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Hey, Caps fans! Place a deposit for full season tickets now and reserve your spot for the 2011-2012 season. Deposits are fully refundable and can be used towards other ticket purchases while retaining your place in line for full season plans next season. For more info on placing your full season ticket deposit, call 202-266-CAPS or log on to WashingtonCaps.com and do your part in building America's hockey capital.
Do you know someone who has done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's second annual Causey Awards. Together, we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated, career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search award.
Hi, I'm Denise Ballou of the FBI. The case was revealed in December 1995. Operation Senior Sentinel targeted illegal boiler rooms and telemarketing fraud.
The case was hugely significant in that it's one of the few, if not only, instances I can think of where an entire crime problem was basically wiped out by very focused, dramatic investigation.
Keith Slaughter is special agent in charge of FBI San Diego. Formerly in Miami, he initiated the undercover operation that evolved into Senior Sentinel.
These were telemarketers who were really, really bad individuals who were promising big prizes and a lot of different things, preying on customers, especially the elderly.
Many were conned into losing their life savings, but the tables were turned.
Instead of using undercover agents in those cases, we used a combination of retired agents and retired citizens affiliated with the AARP to pose as victims.
Ultimately, about 1,200 arrests and hundreds of convictions. I'm Denise Ballou of the Bureau on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Last April, 256 senior federal managers went missing. Are you next? The most successful managers know to never pass up an opportunity to learn. Join them this year to discover how to maximize your agency's forward momentum at the Federal Senior Management Conference at the Hyatt Regency Chesapeake Bay in Cambridge, Maryland, this April 10th through 13th. The Federal Senior Management Conference is the preeminent conference for senior federal managers, presented for government by government advisors, with registration open only to government employees. Register now at fedsmc.com or call 202-237-0300.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Kevin Plexico. Kevin is the Senior Vice President for Research and Analysis Services at Input. Kevin, we haven't discussed the implications of a shutdown for government employees yet, so let's start there.
So historically, government employees, when they do get furloughed, Congress has come around on the back end of that to make them whole. You're not guaranteed of that. They don't lose their benefits during the furlough, but they do lose their pay. And I think that's what's going to be interesting to watch. My expectation is that Congress would come around on the back end. Just for popular opinion, it would be very, I think, awkward for Congress to force a shutdown and then not make whole the employees that it's counting on to execute and implement its plans. But certainly the employers are the ones at the end of the day who have the most fear, uncertainty, and doubt around a shutdown. Now, government contractor employees have a less certain outcome, and it really depends on how your company chooses to handle a shutdown. If you're sent home and your contractor employer decides that they're not footing the bill for the government shutdown either,
right,
then you're going to be the one who's left holding the bag or not having the bag of money because you didn't get paid for time that you were sent home.
Okay. What's your feel for, is there a significant percentage of the contracting workforce that may be 1099?
I think there are quite a few of them, actually.
And they are most likely.
And they're most likely to lose it, though they're probably more used to having undependable income,
right. Yeah.
From a contracting point of view. But there'll be salaried employees who'll be facing lost wages as well. And I think, at the end of the day, you have to talk to your supervisors and find out how is the company planning to handle this. And it's also going to depend on how long the shutdown is. Some companies will cover the bill for a short period of time. If it's a long one, they're going to be hard pressed to cover that. I also think it's going to depend on whether your company is a large company or a small company, because small companies can't generally afford to pay when they're not getting paid. They don't have that luxury like a large company typically does.
Yeah, and I know a lot of small companies that are literally, under 20 people, some under 10, and if there's a lockout for them, man, it just gets tough quick.
Very quick.
So, all right, what can and should contractors be doing right now to prepare?
Well, I think the first would be to take inventory very quickly of your contracts to understand which ones have already had funds obligated and how long those obligations will last you to work them, which ones where you're pretty clear you're going to not have the employee available to go on site. Pretty clear it's time and materials and you're not going to be able to get paid for that work.
Yep.
So you have an understanding of that. Figure out if there's an opportunity for you in working with the contracting office for some of those contracts to see if resources could get shifted to another contract so that you might keep those employees gainfully employed during that time, as well as lining up internal projects that maybe you had that, cleanup activities, internal programs you wanted to advance that you didn't have any resources to do. Look at those types of things as ways to cover yourself during the period of the outage, and also paying attention to cash flow, because certainly if you're not getting paid and you're not getting paid for a long period of time, it's going to be very hard for you to sustain your business and pay your employees if you don't have the cash.
Okay. Those are the major things?
Those are the major ones.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Let me throw out some minor ones.
Okay.
If there is a shutdown on March 10, there's a webinar by a company that I'm familiar with.
Oh, yeah.
And do you want to mention that?
Absolutely. There's some things that you can do to fill the time. If sitting around the house is just not something that you're keen on doing and you're going to be in that position, I would encourage you to attend our March 10th webinar on the federal budget. We will go through the federal budget in detail, looking at the insights and implications around the budget and what it means for the contracting community, and that will be in March. So please join us for that.
Yeah, and March 9, if there is a shutdown, even if there's not a shutdown, if you haven't heard the news, my partner and I, Kevin Young, have merged our Government Market Master program into an executive program at the School of Management at George Mason. Our first event is March 9, and the same event is repeated March 22, and that would be my Government Marketing Best Practices Seminar, which is now in its 11th year.
It's good to hear that we're both doing our part to make sure people aren't on the streets.
We don't want them bored.
No.
We don't want them bored. On a different note, there was a story in the Washington Post. We're recording this on Friday. It airs Monday. But today in the Post, there was a story on a congressman from a freshman from New Hampshire who has seen that voting certain ways has consequences. But one of the things that struck me in the story, and New Hampshire has nothing to do with this, he voted for that airplane engine gig that has been a sore spot. Pentagon doesn't want it, but it seems to me that the only reason that I and this is purely guesswork, that he might have voted for that is Mr. Boehner.
Well, you know, it's hard to... I always get skeptical when I hear of a certain congressman getting accused of voting against or for something. And the challenge is that these pieces of legislation encompass so much that you might be on the one side voting for an insourcing initiative that is, you know, a very small portion of a large funding bill. And what comes out is you voted for insourcing or you voted against insourcing. And that's what people hold you out as kind of the enemy for doing. And I sympathize with congressmen, not generally, but in this particular case, because you have to make a decision on a piece of legislation. The piece of legislation is rather extensive and covers a lot of ground. And if you're going to pick one fight, you're going to lose the battle on a whole bunch of other ones that you might be trying to advance.
Yeah. Have you seen Tom Davis lately?
Not lately.
Okay. Have you seen him since he left?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Tom, former a congressman from Northern Virginia, he looks so relaxed now. And when you ask him about this stuff, he sort of smiles because he's not in the middle of it anymore.
His answers have gotten a lot more interesting and opinionated now, too, I think.
Yeah, they have. and you know, we always knew he was deep. And he's one of the few people on the Hill or from the Hill who has a thorough grasp of the executive branch and what contractors bring to the table and how the two, you know, the feds and the contracting community should work together. You know, he's the adult supervision that seems to be lacking right now on the Hill. And I only bring him up because he looks so darn good these days and so happy to be away from the fray. And, you know, Clarence Cohen, I sat down with Bill Clinger during one of the anniversary parties. This is a few years back, several years back. And even back then, he said, you know, I'm just so happy to be away from the Hill because it's gotten so contentious. Boy, anything else going on at Input we should know about? Let me ask a different question. You were bought by Dell Tech about, what, a year ago now?
Actually, about 6 months ago. Oh, it was in October.
No, it seems like a year to me.
You might have announced it 3 months before that when you were speculating on who was buying us.
who's who? Yeah, it could have been. It's probably why. But that seems to have gone really, really smoothly.
They're a great organization. They, I think in an ideal world, any company that's getting acquired would want to be acquired by a company where you're not redundant with what they're doing, but you're complementary. And certainly for the folks at Input, this ended very, very well for us in getting sold to a company that viewed us as such a complementary capability to what they do. So for me, having grown up at Input for many years, the intersection of software and content and information is really an exciting industry and business to be in. And to be doing it in the government contracting world, where it's such a dynamic and exciting world to be in, is a great place to be.
Right. It doesn't always look exciting, dynamic from the outside, but boy, when you're in here in the middle of it, there's no cooler market in the world.
It's hard to sell that outside the D.C. area, but inside the D.C. area, it's pretty cool.
it ain't Hollywood, and thank God for that.
That's right.
Kevin, thanks so much for coming in. You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you've missed it, my guest has been Kevin Plexico, Senior Vice President for Research and Analysis Services at Input. And Input is a Dell Tech Information Solutions company. This is not my day job. As I mentioned earlier, my Government Market Master program has merged into a certificate-based program at George Mason University's School of Management. And our first sessions are March 9 and March 22. You can find information for those at federaldirect.net. You can find information on the Input webinar at input.com. And remember, you have not been everywhere until you've been off center with AmTower.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Find news about federal information assurance and new information from various agency CISOs and CIOs on the Federal Security Spotlight on federalnewsradio.com, sponsored by Cisco.
Over 100 and going strong. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS